The following podcast was recorded during a session at the Climate Justice Coalition's gathering, which took place in May 2024. In it, CJC General Secretary Alex Lonferna and Deputy Secretary General Mbali Baduza have a conversation with present members on the inception of the coalition, tracking how the coalition grew from a moment of solidarity to the force it has become today.
Good afternoon, leaders. My name is Mbali Baduza. I'm the Deputy Secretary of the Coalition. So welcome. It's so good to see so many of you here with us. It's been a long time coming. And the purpose of this session is to reflect about the past four and a half years of the coalition. And there are some of you who are here who started off with us and others who joined us along the way. And we're hoping that this session can be interactive, where we go back to the past collectively. You know, we create this collective memory together. So to start off, I'm going to ask a quick question. In 2019, what happened? Why is 2019 significant for the coalition?
The coalition was founded, if I'm not mistaken.
But what was happening? What was the event?
So the IPCC report just came out at the end of 2018, and youth were mobilizing globally. And as we were able to have the most amazing march. I mean, we were all there. It was huge in Joburg.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct. So we started off in 2019 with the youth strikes. Such an important moment where young people got together and were like, enough is enough. Then after, we decided to get together. There were organizations such as Section 27, 350, Lawyers for Human Rights, Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee. We had the General Industries of Workers Union of South Africa. We all got together and said, why don't we start a coalition? And that happened in February 2020. Now, Uncle Tamba, what happened the month after? What happened in March 2020?
COVID.
Yeah, COVID-19 hurt. Can I ask the room, does anybody remember how that moment felt when everything had to stand still and we had to ask ourselves, and now? Cleo.
High rate of poverty increased and we were very frustrated because we couldn't go out to hustle. And we were scared even to go out because it was very strict. Others, they were not even sure whether to vaccinate or not. Is it vaccination going to assist us or not? Is it really going to prevent the COVID-19? So it was very frustrating. And with food, again, it was a very frustrating part of it.
Before you move, do you remember what we decided to do as a coalition? So COVID hits, and we had plans with Green New Eskom to go on the streets, you know, to march. What did we decide to do instead? Do you remember?
Not really.
So we thought, hey, let's invest in Zoom, right? And we got together and had a project called the Just Recovery Report. Does anybody remember that report?
Oh, yeah.
The Just Recovery Report. Can anybody speak to that? Anyone from IEJ, Escape?
I mean, yeah, I can't speak on everything in it, but I think a big part of what that symbolized was understanding that we cannot move through this period of struggle and come out business as normal. Mm. You know, it had to be that this was an opportunity for us to build a foundation of solidarity so that when we came out, business as usual would be disrupted and an opportunity for systemic change could be uncovered. So it looked at how do we make sure that we are properly managing the crisis that's happening with climate, but also bringing in that kind of social element as well.
Yeah, exactly. Anybody else? Okay, great. Thanks, Gabe. We also did something different. We launched our podcast. What's the name of our podcast?
Just Us and the Climate. I listen to it all the time. It's brilliant.
Not to put you on the spot, Alex, but I'm going to. What was our thinking around Just Us and the Climate? Why was it important for us to have a podcast? And why was it important for us to start doing it during COVID?
Yeah, so I think there was a few reasons. One is we recognized that we needed to showcase the different voices across the movement, because I think there's a prevalent sort of image in your head when somebody talks about environmentalists, they think white, middle-class, conservative, right? And that was not what this coalition's about. This is a coalition that's built on mass struggle, on centering justice, on transforming systems, on tackling the exploitative economic system. So it was, how do we showcase the different voices from across the coalition? So Just Us together, we're showcasing our different voices, co-hosting this podcast, and also showing that climate change is not only a crisis, as our tagline suggests, but also an opportunity to build a better and more just world. And so it was using the podcast as a way of doing popular education around the ways that we can tackle the climate crisis, center justice, and build transformative solutions into how we address that.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's think about the difficulties of a podcast is we wanted to have the podcast in different languages. And we had our first episode in Shivenda. And I think that was one of the few episodes we had in one of the South African languages. And it's something that we still want to pursue, because don't you find when we talk about issues, it's always in English, but also never in a way that is relatable to people's day-to-day lives. And that also includes how we speak, the language that we use. So one of the challenges of the podcast was using different languages, and that's something we hope to get better at. But also during 2020, 2021, we formalized two campaigns, two very important campaigns. Can anybody tell me which ones they are?
It was Uproot the DMRE.
So those were central campaigns to the formation of the Climate Justice Coalition. And because of that, I think that's how we built momentum across the country. But it was also important that we not only build momentum in terms of the issues we address, but also how we form ourselves. And it was important that we have some kind of structure, terms of reference, a constitution. And there were two specific issues that were a source of contestation. Does anybody remember what those issues were? We were here last year, 2 years ago. I know you know. You know? Okay, let's go, Farah.
I don't know. Okay, sorry, I'm hogging. It's two.
If I'm not mistaken, one of them was the individualization of, or at least there was the Gwede of it all, which was the coalition Alex Lenferner, 350 Africa, Gwede Mantashe, kind of boundaries and non-boundaries that were set forward, where Gwede Mantashe was going after Alex, and to a further extent, then we as the coalition ended up turning Uproot DMRE into Uproot Gwede. So there was an element of that, but I think, yeah, we've come out of that stronger for it.
But can you explain a little more how we came out of it?
Yeah.
Because that links to the second issue.
I think a big part of it was through robust conversation and discussion, and also understanding that we did need to move away from 350 Africa as a coalition. And that's where the beginning mindset started of that point. But also that we needed to kind of follow certain processes and procedures as a coalition. Yeah, I'm not necessarily sure what else you're maybe hinting at. It's probably sitting in the back of my head, but you want me to say something, and I know I can say it, but I don't know what it is.
I'll say it, but let's go to Cleo.
If I'm correct, is the action we took to Pretoria that says the most wanted person, and we put the posters of the most wanted person, which is Kwedemantashe, and we went in numbers to the DMRE to make some noise, and
Theron, do you still want to come in?
No.
Okay. Yeah, one of the issues was separating Kwedemantashe from the DMRE. And as a coalition, obviously there's difference in approach. And we decided to focus a lot more on DMRE as an institution because, you know, the faces change, but perhaps it's a more systemic issue. But that doesn't mean that Gwede isn't a problem and he remains a problem. But what I was hinting at in terms of the second issue about how we resolved it was, I think that's where we learned the spirit of charity and generosity amongst each other in the coalition, because, you know, with a lot of divergent views, there's so much distrust. But we decided that it is important at all times to remember that we are doing this together, that Gabriel aren't doing this out of malice, but rather are trying to move the movement in a way that is genuine and sincere. So the spirit of generosity and charity in interpretation was an issue that we actually built up as a coalition linked to that issue. And yes, like Cleo said, we had a big demonstration, a national demonstration against the DMRE in 2021. Alex, I'm going to put you on the spot again because we did something interesting around the DMRE with Politically Aware and their fruits as a result of that. Do you mind making a comment?
Sure. So I think one of the things we've realized as a coalition in our communications is that satire, making fun of those in power and exposing their hypocrisy, is one of our most powerful tools. And it's also the thing that tends to get us in trouble a lot of the times. And so as part of the Uproot the DMRE mobilizations we had across the country, we worked together with a young outfit called Politically Aware that does satirical political coverage. And we put together what was quite a fun mock advert pretending that it's the DMRE selling our country off to the fossil fuel industry. And that video went, I think, semi-viral, I guess, and got a lot of traction. It got the DMRE tweeting saying, no, this isn't actually our advert, and it got them threatening to sue us. And it was really powerful. I think it got under their skin, and it exposed just how the DMRE is captured by these extractive industries and is putting the interest of corporations over the interest of people. And the power of that video meant not only that it get under the skin of the DMRE and help us build Uproot the DMRE, it also meant that we won a South African Film and Television Award for the best online content the following year for that video.
Okay, so now enter 2022. It was important at this time to consolidate as the secretariat, because we realized we were growing at a fast pace and yet we didn't have the capacity to deal with it. And then we decided to hire people for the first time, have a staff dedicated to doing the work of the coalition. That process was intense. We got amazing applicants. And we were hiring for three positions. The first was a Digicoms person. Shazia eventually got the job. Clap, clap, clap. We then also hired, we also advertised for an organizer position. Now, the organizer position was difficult to fill because we had stellar candidates, namely Cleo and Elton. And the decision was then to split the post into two so that we can have both of them, but also so that they can continue to do their work in their own organizations. So we then hired Cleo and Elton, and they've been doing a great job since. You can also clap. We also had the coordinator position. And there, we had a bit of some difficulty with our first hire. But then we found Busi, who is currently on maternity leave, who took over the position and has helped us, you know, in many ways get to where we are today. So that's Busi. And ever since then, we've been known as the Extended Secretariat. It's been a journey because leadership in that sense always still has to be consultative. But how do you consult with a national coalition? And that is one of the challenges we've been experiencing. But what we usually do is the monthly meetings, which people have been attending. We have the working groups that we established. And that in that way, we were led by you in how we drove the coalition. And then came November 2022. Does anybody remember what happened in November 2022? Yes, Farron, I know you remember. And why it was significant.
We had the, I don't remember the name, the March for
Jobs,
Energy, and
Climate justice.
Okay, yes, we had that march. And maybe it was significant because we joined up with unions.
Yeah.
And the EPWP workers who were also campaigning for upskilling and training and decent jobs.
Yeah. Before you go,
Were
there any challenges we experienced?
Oh, well, yes. Many challenges. The big challenge was that the big trade union federations sort of, I don't know how to say this in a nice way, Mbali, must give me a chance to think.
Okay.
we just had a challenge of the logistics and organizing with the trade unions because there was another march on the day. So we had to, that's a nice way. Okay, there was another march the same day. And so we had to work with KASATU and SAFTU and Fidusa, I think, and that caused some conflict and difficulties in handing over our memorandum at the at Treasury, and then they wouldn't allow us to make an announcement to go to the Department of Public Enterprise. So there was that clash or dispute.
But how did we overcome it?
We made a plan. We had plan B's on plan C's on plan D's. We were able to re-caucus and meet up just through word of mouth. And some of our comrades in the trade unions also assisted with that and made an announcement. And then I think, we handed over our memorandum sort of separately, a little bit separate, like outside. We made an arrangement with the Treasury representative.
Great. So, yeah. Thanks, Farron. An important thing that happened in 2023 was the social ownership dialogue in Gqeberha. Yeah, the super spreader. Was anybody there in this room? Yes, lots of people to ask. Okay, can we start with Francina? Can we get a reflection of the dialogue in Gqeberha?
Okay, thank you. The dialogue in Gqeberha, it was trade unions, CBOs. It was a mix of different stakeholders there. And with that, it led to the part that I did like of going to the municipality, protesting demanding renewable energy for communities. And with that, the good part about it is that community of Gqeberha were not heard when they talk. But with that, it led that Comrade Alex became part of that meeting that they agreed to listen to the communities of Gqeberha. And for me, it shows that as we are united, we have a voice to change the system. Thank you.
Thanks, Francine.
I thought it was really great bringing together... Is this working? No, I'll speak louder. It's great to bring together workers, community members, CSOs, academics, everybody, and with different perspectives and expertise. So it was a very lively discussion, very good breakouts, etc. I think there are obviously some difficult fault lines, but I think it's a positive because it highlights them, the things that we need to solve. And one of which is the kind of question of can like community ownership of renewables and social ownership and a public sector like Eskom-led transition, can those visions work together? Because I think there were some polarized positions but also misunderstandings on it. But I don't think that's a negative, because I think it's clarified that a lot of us have our work cut out in actually thinking it through and trying to harmonize it and have a workable plan. Thanks,
Robert. Anybody else? Clear?
Just an addition based on what Rob was saying about social ownership is that we have an example of what do we mean by social ownership, because there was a group, I can't remember the name of the organization, where they built a solar for the community or for the block area, and that was a very powerful one to show our government that nothing is possible. We can't be saying things that are not doable.
Thank you. Anybody else before I move on? Okay, so 2023, there's so much that happened in 2023. We made submissions. Alex wrote a lot of op-eds. We stood in solidarity with movements across the world. We even won an award from Mail and Guardian, Greening the Future Award then. But I think 2024 is something special happened. And I want to put you again, Cleo, on the spot. Is that for the first time, we took the time to mobilize in Mpumalanga. We had several workshops. We were led by organizations or member organizations on the ground on issues that, you know, they wanted to put forward. And we had a massive demonstration. Can you please reflect on that?
Okay, let me start and then maybe they can add. First and foremost, I have to share that building a base as CJC in Mpumalanga was a never easy process because we went there not knowing where to start, since Mpumalanga is big, but because we are activists, and as we are activists, we don't burn our bridges because one day we will want to cross using those bridges. So we managed to get few comrades who suggested others that they think they are relevant. Then the first visit, in fact, it's where people, they were a bit skeptical to say, who is CJC? Hey, these people, they are new. We've been used enough, comrades. Mm. We don't want same thing to happen with you again. Can we give us time so that we can sign, whether as a member of the coalition or as a friend or as a supporter of a coalition? And finally, when we came back from Mpumalanga, there was a whole range of organization affiliating to the CJC, and that tells us that it's either they've Googled us. I remember Comrade Depe said, before you came to meet us, Comrade, we knew who are you, so no need to explain yourself. Then when I keep on engaging, Comrade decided that Cleo, yes, we are based in the province Mpumalanga, but we don't know what people in Grill are doing, what people in the Middleburg are doing. So how about maybe we create a WhatsApp group whereby we can know what is happening within the province before going in assisting other provinces or even participating fully within the coalition. Then that happened, and we planned a workshop on Green New Eskom in Carolina, and that was very full of participants, and that's where, in fact, the energy of people feeling themselves as being full members of CJC started. Then on the 28th of March, there was a big mobilization. And on the big mobilization, at first, I was like, oh God, are we going to do this or am I dreaming? But because we work as a team, we were engaging and engaging. Then the police wanted to sabotage us on the 19th to say, you have to follow proper procedures. You can't do this because we know our human rights. Yeah. We went to the street on the 28th with 200 plus people. Yeah. And there were no police escorting us or directing the traffic. We did that on our own. And when we arrived at the MRE, most of our female comrades, they were wearing pampas written, this is not our CV. Please interview us in the bathroom and not in the bedroom. Yeah. And some of the pampas were thrown at the DMR staff members because, in fact, they were not even cooperative from the onset. Mm. And we got some blessings from the center manager because the DMR is situated in a center. So the center manager was very supportive in making all this successful. Let me not eat the whole cow and give other comrades a chance.
Thanks, Cleo. That's an amazing reflection because it also shows you how mobilizing and organizing is about building trust and taking the time to do so. Can I please ask for one more reflection from one of our comrades from Malang?
Yeah, truly speaking, first time that we knew about CJC, we didn't trust because of we are an organization that we want to grow ourselves, but other people, they are coming to loot our ideas. Our organizations are staying wherever where they are, but they are growing up. Now, what we did, we met Comrade Cleo. I myself, I said, no, I won't agree now. Maybe you are one of those people. Mm. Let me go and just Google. First thing first, when I Google, I saw Alex. And I read the story about Alex. I said, okay, let me give them a chance. When we start to discuss with other organizations, we said, we didn't say we are joining. We said we give them a chance. Mm. Until we held a workshop, Green New Eskom. That's where we saw the participation was very good. We saw that, no, these people, we can work together. These people, they can help us so that we can be here in Mpumalanga. Most of the just transition processes will be happening in Mpumalanga. and our voices as communities are not heard. But if we can work together with them, maybe even the MRE, it can come to our meetings and listen to us. Mm. That's where we started to work with CJC, and we are happy with that. Thanks.
Thank you, Kong. So, so we've taken a chance to look back, but it's also important that we take the time to think ahead. Alex, can you guide us through that?
Sure thing. Thanks, comrades, and thanks very much, Mbali. Maybe just one thing that historically, as a CJC, we believe quite strongly in our principles and our values, and we've only ever had to exclude two members of the coalition based on those principles and values. And one of the members that we did exclude was because they were going on public platforms saying that women can't lead. And so we were like, that's not in alignment with our values. And I say that because I want to thank Mbali, who has been a rock as deputy secretary. And Mbali, as many folks will know, is in the process of stepping down from deputy secretary. So maybe I can take a moment to celebrate like the leadership of Mbali.
Thanks, guys.
And the thing that made that comment so ridiculous is because the amount of incredible women leadership we see across the coalition, whether it's facilitating our working groups, leading our organizing, driving community organizing, across the coalition there is that strong woman leadership. So that person couldn't have been more wrong, and it was a good reason that we ejected them for that, which they were unapologetic about. And I mean, it's really incredible, comrades. We've grown as a coalition from being a handful of member organizations to the last time we were here, sitting in Valverde 2 years ago, it was 20 member organizations. And now we're a coalition made up of 60 different member organizations, community-based organizations, NPOs, trade unions, all working together. So that's something to really celebrate. And we went from being a loose, informal coalition to one that has hopefully accountable leadership, a secretariat with staff supporting that, as well as a steering committee that helps drive and guide the coalition. So the structures of the coalition have matured over time. And we're also on a pathway to becoming, you know, our own entity in itself. As we grew, we did rely heavily on some of our members to help support us and provide the support of the coalition, including having 350.org as a fiscal host of the coalition, and we are grateful to 350 for that. But we as a coalition are also moving to becoming our own independent entity that doesn't have to rely on an INGO as a fiscal host, but that has our own independent legal entity so that we can drive our own policies, have more independence. So that's something that's very much on the agenda for today. And I think we've taken a really important political journey together as well. You know, I think when we look at South Africa, we must recognize that, you know, we are the most unequal country in the world on some measures. We're also one of the most polluting countries. And so when we thought as a coalition, what is the thing that we really want to focus on, it was looking at what are some of the biggest crises we face and what is the biggest contributor to the climate crisis. And that's how we built our Green New Eskom campaign together. And coming out of Green New Eskom, we realized that actually the biggest obstacle to transforming Eskom was obviously Eskom itself, but the DMRE being the biggest obstacle. And so that's where we went to uproot the DMRE, where we, as a coalition, organize mobilizations in every single province across the country, right? And that in itself is a sign of the power and the strength of the coalition that we were able to do that. And the fact that the DMRE responded scared, with legal threats, with really trying to attack us and claiming that we're these foreign-funded entities, these third force claims, that means that we got under their skin, that they had to lie, that they had to be dishonest, and then they had to threaten us in order to try and squash the strength, the building strength of the coalition, right? So this was really important work that we did on the energy and mining justice intersection, which has been a really key part of how we've been growing as a coalition. And building on that, we recognized that we wanted to clarify what social ownership of renewable energy meant, which is why we had the National Dialogue on Social Ownership of Renewable Energy. And I think that wasn't just a dialogue for the sake of talking to each other. What we were able to get out of that Was that dialogue formed the basis of a report that went to the Presidential Climate Commission and was adopted basically saying these are some of the ways that we want to see social ownership of renewable energy move forward? And so I think we can congratulate ourselves that we were part of doing that. And as a result of our efforts, social ownership of renewable energy is not only on the Presidential Climate Commission's map, but that report is set to be adopted by the President's office as a policy recommendation. So congratulations on that, comrades. The Economic Justice Working Group has been doing good work, starting from the Just Recovery report that tried to identify how we could transform our extractive economic system and put in place an economic system that was more socially and ecologically just. And building on that, we've seen the webinar series that has been exploring different facets of what economic and climate justice can mean together. And Lungisa and Tara, they've been leading that work in a really powerful way. And so we will hopefully have some discussions about how do we build on that transformative vision of economic justice together. And I think one of the big questions that we are bringing to this gathering is to think about what does the future of the coalition look like, building on that campaigning, also building on the work of the legal task team that has been doing great work coordinating some of our legal advocacy, whether it's pushing back against the Messina-Mercado Special Economic Zone, helping drive forward the climate change bill. And the climate change bill has been passed into law. So another victory that I think we can celebrate as a coalition. Obviously, it's not perfect, but we're going to work and improve on it, right? And so these are big victories that the coalition has been central in helping to drive forward. But the next step for us, I think, is to think about, we've been talking about the People's Power campaign as a campaign that can connect together work across the coalition, bringing together the work the legal task team is doing, that the energy and mining justice task team is doing, and to something that really connects together the coalition. And so we want to think strategically in this gathering, what are the priorities that we want to put at the center of that campaign together, right? Now, there's different ways that we can think about that and how we prioritize it. One is that we can think about, should we put what the coalition has been really strong on at the forefront of it through social ownership of renewable energy? Could we, for example, as a coalition, begin to drive our own bill forward and pass that in a way that builds out public renewable energy and socially owned renewable energy so that we go on the offensive with a campaign to drive our own bill forward? And we can draw inspiration from the likes of New York State, where they passed a bill called the Build Public Renewables Act, which is all about doing that. Is that the sort of thing that we want to put at the forefront of the People's Power campaign? Do we want it to be broader, where we're looking at a sort of a transformative climate justice vision that intersects around water justice, energy justice, across food justice, and make that the center of our People's Power campaign? And how can we do those things together? And I think the challenge that we have with a coalition that's as big and broad as this is to find where our priorities are going to be, where we work together. Because I think we bring together so many different and important struggles. So what are the ways that we can build those struggles together so that the sum of the coalition is bigger than its parts, and so that we're uniting and building those strengths together?